Director General, Ministers, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, if I did as long a show as this in the theatre, people would be booing me now, so especially without a break. I don't know how you ladies are managing. I'm delighted to be nominated as a goodwill ambassador. I hope I'll be able to do something useful. We've heard this morning that a lot needs doing, but I'm merely an actor, a storyteller. That's my role in life. So maybe, as it's World Food Day, forgive me if my story today is about hunger. I won't take too much of your time. We've heard nearly everything that I'm about to say already. In our world, billions of dollars are spent on aid and investment. Billions of words are spoken, written, promising change, and a billion people still go hungry every day. Now, as a citizen of the world, I find myself asking, why is this? Is it that we need more money? Or do we need to find more effective ways of spending what money we have? Or do we need an entirely new approach to preventing hunger worldwide? Now, we need to answer these questions urgently, because what we do know is the gap between those who have and those who have not is widening every year. We in this room in Rome today are more likely to suffer from the effects of food excess than shortage. So whilst 1 billion people starve in the poorer places of the world, we in the wealthier nations worry about epidemics of obesity. 215, we imagine there will be 2.3 billion adults overweight and more than 700 million obese. Now, I'm told that our world produces enough food for everyone, so the problem isn't a lack of food, it's a lack of access to food by those who cannot afford it. On top of that, year after year, and somewhere in the world, another catastrophe unfolds. And wherever it happens, it is the poorest and the most vulnerable, those already without enough food, especially women and children, who suffer first and worst. Now, is this inevitable, maybe? Well, Fao doesn't think so. The anger expressed by so many in the 1 Billion Hungry Project was directed at what was called political complacency. Well, is it just political complacency that has resulted in the current famine in the Horn of Africa? Or is it more complicated than that? Failure to anticipate and prevent famine carries a huge cost in deaths, disrupted lives and livelihoods, and the destitution of whole communities. This makes picking up the pieces after a disaster so much more difficult. Of course, there are many reasons why we do not respond to famines, just as there are with other emergencies. Politics, geography, economics all play a part in deciding when one emergency is more likely to get a response than another. As individuals, we can be and often are compassionate, generous, fair-minded. But actions on a global scale are governed by economic and political preferences. For example, many of the pledges made at the international conferences are not honored. We saw that after the G8 that was meant to make poverty history. We see it in the inadequate response of governments worldwide to the impending climate change crisis. We see it in the widening gap between rich and poor, between and within countries. And we see it in insensitive approaches to economic development by global commercial agencies and banks, for example, TRIPS and the structural adjustment. Now, even high-profile international agencies with the responsibility for humanitarian responses in times of emergency and disaster have sometimes ignored local and national realities, preferring to act in their own interests. Inappropriate actions and poor coordination between international, national, and civil society agencies too often result in reduced impact and unimaginable suffering. We saw this in Somalia, Ethiopia, Haiti, Kosovo, and, well, the list goes on. But in all of this, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the people who are affected by disasters have often lived for generations in harsh conditions and challenging environments. And they are responding actively and intelligently. They are instinctively survivors and have found a way through in the past thanks to their resilience and resourcefulness. The challenge for us, the outsiders, is to stand beside them, supporting their efforts to minimize their losses when catastrophe hits their normal way of life. Now, I've been interested and encouraged to learn that international agencies and national governments have already started to do just this by stabilizing the price of food in local markets, providing cash to poorer families as prices escalate, and even suspending fees so children don't drop out of school. But sadly, it's still easier to raise money to feed the starving than it is to raise money to prevent them starving in the first place. I've often heard the phrase behavior change as one of the solutions for food shortage and poverty. But does this usually mean getting them to do what we think is best? Isn't it time we knew about why people make the choices they do as they struggle to feed their families before we decide what is best for them? We do have a UN resolution, the responsibility to protect vulnerable populations against genocide, crimes against humanity, and ethnic cleansing. This responsibility to protect can also apply in the case of humanitarian disasters such as the one unfolding in the Horn of Africa. FAO is at the center of international efforts to protect by preventing disasters. Following the work of Nobel economist Amartya Sen, FAO has been at the forefront of developing methods to predict famine based on detailed, quantified information on household economy and food access. These methods have come into use in much of southern Africa and have worked. For example, Malawi avoided famine in 2005-06 after a crop failure through a prompt donor response based on sound household information. As Richard Dowden says in his book, Africa, you cannot achieve anything in Africa unless you work with Africans. To do that, you need to understand Africa and how it thinks and works. And I would add, especially work with women. So why on earth did the current Somali crisis take the world by surprise? It seems to me that we must improve our methods of anticipating impending catastrophe and ensure that the best possible methods of predicting catastrophes are used consistently and are not left to chance. There will be more disasters in the future. Droughts, floods, earthquakes, and conflicts are likely to increase as global temperatures rise and global economic crises affects the poorest. For them, access to food will become more difficult. But the good news is that we can prevent food crises. It's been shown in the recent past that if we take the right steps, we can make success stories the norm, not the exception in the future. We have access to advanced tools to predict and prevent famine. There is no excuse for us not to use them. Now, this will call on all FAO's strengths and resources, coordination and diplomacy, and a sustained commitment to continually improve on the technologies and best practices that are available. It will also require imagination, reaching out to people of goodwill everywhere to create a real global consistency for change. I'm proud to be a small part of FAO, an organization which I believe has the passion and the energy to spearhead a new global movement to create a world free from hunger. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Sir Jeremy, for your excellent, thought-provoking message delivered in your own inimitable style. Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, let me finally introduce another artist who has generously accepted to give the closing recital today. Brazilian guitarist Marcos Vinicius, a legend in Latin America, who in addition to being the author and composer of a repertoire of beautiful music, is also the president of the Italian Guitar Academy. Please, maestro, may I invite you to give your recital.